The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life. I'm delighted to be joined by The Spectator's Matt McDonald, who is managing editor of The Spectator's World Edition in America. He's in Washington at the moment. And we're going to be talking about the attempt to ban, and I use that word incorrectly on purpose, the attempt to ban TikTok in America, because it's a big story there this week. And it's not really a ban, is it, Matt? But it is... it's a ban on a Chinese-owned TikTok, or a CCP-linked TikTok, you could say.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Thank you for having me. Basically, what's happening is there's a bill has been passed in the House, in the lower house, called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary-Controlled Applications Act. And basically what that would require, if it's passed in the Senate, is it would make TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, sell its US entity within 6 months, or if it doesn't, it risks losing access to American app stores and web hosting services. So they would basically say this app needs to not be owned by a country who's considered to be a foreign adversary of America, and the penalty for doing that is losing, you know, your ability to download that app in the App Store or Google Play Store or wherever.
It's weirdly similar, is it not, to a certain story that's happened in Britain this week on a much more micro scale, because Britain is much more micro, but involving the Telegraph and the Spectator.
Yeah.
And the Digital Markets Bill. And it's a piece of digital legislation that the government's putting through, and it's an amendment to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say equally important, obviously, but I'm biased because I work here. But I mean, the issue at the heart of it is pretty similar. It's about how a foreign government can act to have direct influence over a large influential segment of Western society. I think that, and also the lengths to which said foreign governments will go to kind of cast aspersions on the fact that it's actually the foreign government doing the acting. With TikTok in the US, there's been a significant, euphemistically we say public affairs, but we mean lobbying effort to get politicians to vote this bill down. There's a particularly influential American billionaire who donates to a number of Republicans called, I think, Jeff Yass, who is a minority owner in ByteDance. And he has basically retained the services of former Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway to try and sway votes away from the passage of the bill.
But there's also enormous amount of money and powerful interests on the side of banning TikTok. I mean, there's Steve Mnuchin, I believe, is lined up, who former Secretary of the Treasury, is lined up with a group who are keen to buy TikTok as an American-owned company if the ball comes loose from the scrum, whatever the expression is. Let's talk about that first, and then I'll get into my next speculation.
I think Steve Mnuchin is, you know, he was appointed in the administration because of his savvy record as a businessman, and that since leaving the Trump administration and leaving office, he's seeking to, you know, step back into that role. It's pretty interesting that you could end up having a social media app run by the man who makes electric cars versus a social media app run by one of the executive producers of most of the DC films of the last 10 years. It's a lucrative opportunity, I think, for American investors if they can put together the money to kind of swoop in and take advantage of the sale of TikTok if it goes through, because obviously TikTok has a enormous, highly engaged user base among an emerging demographic. You know, it's kind of got Gen Z and the generation below it in a way that other social media apps don't have that kind of dedicated advertising audience. And so, you know, it is a particularly influential app, which is why I think as well there's all the more concern about TikTok being owned by potentially a foreign adversary rather than the other social media apps. You know, like X being owned by Elon Musk and, you know, Zuckerberg owning Meta and Instagram and things of that nature.
And is it particularly short form video content that alarms people? Because it is a very useful propagandistic tool. I mean, anybody who's got sucked into short form video content, which is almost anybody who's used a social media app in the last couple of years. And TikTok is the most potent of these, it seems. Anybody who's had that experience knows. It is extremely, not just distracting, but it totally saps your attention. It makes you unable to concentrate on anything else. If you wanted a tool for propaganda, TikTok and its imitators might be the best thing ever created.
Basically, when it comes to TikTok, there are two disparate issues which get conflated, and they're both kind of like serious and significant. The first issue is basically what I think this bill is addressing, which is the national security aspect of data access. Obviously, most apps that you have on your phone retain a certain amount of user data and then can use that to either tailor what you see in your feed or to decide which adverts you end up getting shown. But they're also ultimately, through part of their functionality, are going to be feeding that data back into a server somewhere and then allowing their algorithm to kind of make those decisions. The issue with TikTok would obviously be whether that information is being fed back to China or to sources which the Chinese Communist Party would kind of have access to. And so therefore, whether you have you're giving a foreign adversary an algorithmic advantage. Now, ByteDance and the TikTok public affairs effort will constantly push back on the idea that that could even possibly be happening. They'll say that, you know, ByteDance is an American, you know, it has an American entity and that the CEO is Singaporean. So therefore, how could this be happening? There is reporting that suggests that it is in fact happening. So the national security aspect of it is one thing, which is what the bill is addressing. There's obviously then the second issue, which applies to TikTok in particular, but also other forms of social media, about addictiveness, its relationship to, you know, teen unhappiness or depression and kind of mental health issues that can kind of arise from it. And therefore, you know, the general wider conversation about whether TikTok is a social good and is, you know, does more good than ill. A lot of the advertising campaigns that you see for TikTok on TV, like when you're watching the Super Bowl, tend to focus on, you know, creators on these apps who have used it to benefit their community. So like that you'll see an app about a grandparent who's, you know, been able to connect with people through the app, or a veteran who's used it to kind of raise awareness for veteran affairs. But that's the kind of line of attack which TikTok tries to kind of take in its defense. The addictiveness is certainly also a secondary issue when it comes to TikTok, but also I think that's one that applies to other American or Western-owned apps as well. Helpfully, a fairly popular term to refer to both issues is to basically brand TikTok digital fentanyl. Fentanyl, yes. Obviously being the drug that is imported from, the ingredients that are imported from China, and then it's, you know, surged through the Mexican drug cartels into America and then either done straight or cut with other drugs such as cocaine or even, you know, they found traces of it in marijuana, which can have like a potentially lethal impact. The implication being that it forms part of a Chinese operation to undermine American strength.
Reminds me of when, do you know what FOBs are? Fixed odd betting terminals. There was a big thing and the whole thing was called the crack cocaine of gambling, and it was just a sort of media way of getting them banned, was to keep referring to them as the crack cocaine of gambling, and I'm sure PR agencies are paid to come up with these slightly crap drug references. But speaking of the PR and the lobbying going on, you know, you mentioned that China's obviously lobbying very hard against it, but there's been a lot of speculation that Israel, a lot of this speculation has been on TikTok, and it's said to be, some people call it anti-Semitic, so we even speculate about this, but I'm not sure it is, There's a lot of speculation that Israel has been lobbying quite hard in Washington to ban TikTok, because Israel has suffered quite badly at the hands of TikTok in the last few months, because young people are getting a lot of their news from TikTok, and it seems like young people are becoming more militantly against Israel because of the videos that they're watching, saying, you know, from the river to the sea and so on.
I think you've got to begin with the caveat, which is that in all reporting that's out there about this, they say that, you know, there's no evidence of kind of Israel, direct Israel kind of public spending on this as an issue. There was a Democratic congresswoman who I think accused IPAC, which is the American Israeli Political Action Committee, of kind of being behind the efforts to ban it. And she was kind of like widely refuted. But undeniably, from a content level, a lot of minds have changed in Washington due to the America more widely, due to the way that news, and I use that in quote marks, spread after kind of October 7th and that attack. Previous efforts to ban TikTok or to kind of take any kind of action to reshore it have failed. They were like, this isn't the first act that's of its type, but it's the first one since October 7th, and it's the first one to secure, you know, majority bipartisan support in the House. There's speculation that a lot of that could be kind of content related, purely because of how easy it would be to go viral on TikTok with a video which kind of either misreported certain aspects of October 7th in a way that made Israel look bad or Israel look like they're lying. And like, I think, you know, historically, the Israel-Palestine conflict has been like a pretty hotbed of misinformation. What happened on TikTok with videos spreading around among young people, and then young people perhaps feeling more motivated to go out and protest against America's backing of Israel in its war against Gaza. That's kind of activated a lot of congressmen to see it as more of a social ill. I will also point out another thing which I think is worth registering is that when the bill came up for vote in the House this week, there was kind of an effort to kind of encourage users of TikTok to contact their representatives and implore them not to vote for the bill. And so there was kind of a deluge. This was, I think, on the day of the the day of the State of the Union, but there was like a deluge of kind of calls from, you know, 13 and 14 year olds in high school phoning up their congressional offices, and some of them, you know, threatening to kill themselves if TikTok got banned, and threatening to or, you know, making assassination threats. I think that kind of backfired as an effect, because it basically showed that the app as it stands does appear to have like something of a fell influence among this generation, and therefore is something which needs, you know, to, for a lot of representatives, they thought this is something which needs to be put in check. I remember we spoke to one representative last week, Ashley Hinson, who basically said that whenever someone was threatening suicide, whenever a child was threatening suicide, she just immediately asked them to put their parents on so she could have an adult conversation about about that. But yeah, it's a very strange set of circumstances. I think, again, you know, one of the reasons why this conversation is, you know, perhaps more salient now is it's an election year. In 2016, there was a lot of conversation around whether Facebook was deployed by a foreign power, in this case Russia, to kind of have sway in by misinforming key voters in key swing states. And therefore, I think that's probably another factor as to why this conversation seems more pertinent now.
Well, and the Biden administration has made TikTok influencers a key part of its re-election strategy, we're told. And yet, it seems to be Trump that is more opposed to this ban than Biden.
Trump is said to be considering this key Republican donor as a treasury pick, so to be his treasury secretary in his next administration. So I wonder how much that's a factor. But yeah, the bill made some pretty strange bedfellows in that Biden said that he'd sign it, but then Biden also, you know, joined TikTok in attempts to reach people. You've had lots of politicians in this primary cycle sort of flip-flop on this issue, where they say, I think, you know, I was on day one of the great Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign, who was a, you know, minor candidate who dropped out after Iowa and immediately endorsed Trump. He on day one was saying TikTok is digital fentanyl, and under 16 should be banned from using it. And then he joined TikTok as part of his campaign and was appearing in, you know, TikToks with Jake Paul, the YouTuber, in attempts to curry youth support. On the Republican side of the people who are opposed to the TikTok ban, in addition to Trump, included, you know, and Trump, remember, is a social media magnate himself. So he may be subscribing to the Elon Musk school of opposing the TikTok ban, because he basically thinks if the government is going to step in and say who gets to own social media apps, then I'll be next, right? And, you know, Tucker Carlson also voiced opposition to it. But then they as a kind of group of opponents are also joined by members of the Squad, you know, the far left progressives of the Democratic Party, like Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who basically, I think they're hesitant of it perhaps more because they're afraid of a decrease in their enormous influential followings on TikTok. Like, AOC has a million followers across two accounts, so it's a pretty important outreach tool for her to kind of speak to her fans.
And do you think it's going to be banned? I mean, it'll be pushed. It's being pushed into next week, the vote in the Senate.
Possibly longer.
So you think it could just be sort of kicked into the legislative long grass?
That's the kind of indication that some senators are making. I basically, there was Josh Hawley, you know, is a fairly populist senator, Republican from Missouri. Direct quote from him is, he said that they will try to kill this slowly, refer it to committee, think about it some more, and then this time next year we'll be right here having the same conversation. So there's certain cynicism within the Senate. Early predictions, if there was going to be a quick vote on this, you know, someone who speaks to senators regularly told me that they reckoned that it could pass with 85 votes to 15 if it went up for vote quickly. And therefore, you know, I think part of the TikTok effort to prevent this sell-off will be to slow things down. If you look at the record of who voted for this bill to pass in the House, it was majority bipartisan. It was something like 352-70. And therefore, you'd expect potentially a similar pattern to emerge in the Senate. And so, I mean, it could therefore end up passing regardless. It's really just a question of when Senator Chuck Schumer decides to bring it to a vote.
Well, you could quite see why some Republicans are concerned about this, you know, regardless of what they think about China and ByteDance and TikTok. Letting the Democrats essentially take charge of the sale, which they would be, in effect. I mean, it would have to go through Congress again, or would it have, how would it work?
I feel like it's, again, what you're once again drawn into a parallel conversation about what's happening with this magazine. As in, I don't think many people know exactly who would be in charge of administrating that sale. It just would have to happen within 6 months.
My point there is that precisely as with the sale of this magazine, you do have the government now sort of in charge in a way, and you would have a Democratic White House arguably in charge, possibly in charge of what goes on, or certainly with a veto over it, perhaps, of what goes on with TikTok in the run-up to an election. Possibility for tinkering with a very, very well-used social media app there is very, very big. And it reminds me of what happened in 2012 when Facebook was used a lot by the Obama campaign, and it was called the power of friendship when it worked for the Democrats. And then when it appeared to get Donald Trump elected, it was called Russia brainwashing and so on. You could see why some Republicans might be worried about what the Democrats might do with TikTok.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, let's talk out a hypothetical situation. Let's say that the bill passes the Senate and that therefore it does end up falling, and it's decided that it falls to the Biden administration's, you know, trade secretary or whoever to decide, or the FTC or the FCC to decide who's able to buy it. And then you have Steve Mnuchin leading a consortium as a majority bidder who might make the biggest offer. But then what, you know, do you end up in a situation where politics therefore trumps good business? And though, even though you said, oh, our only issue is with foreign ownership, if you've got Trump's former Treasury Secretary saying that he wants to buy it, are the Democrats going to look less kindly upon that bid than a kind of more independent arbitrator would? Yeah, it could get quite fun, I agree.
These are very, very murky waters indeed, Matt. But thank you very much for helping us swim in them a little bit. I will speak to you soon. That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Farrows, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review
of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.